Garth Brooks meant to play 4, 5, 3, whatever amount of gigs towards the end of this month in Croke Park in Dublin. It's still up in the air whether it's going to happen or not. I don't think there's any sort of definite answer yet. But anyway, just go back many years, early 90s or sometime around then. I'm not sure exactly, maybe 93, 94 or something. Just Garth Brooks was here and I did a bit of talking to him. So let's start off then with, first of all, the voice of Dave Fanning. 51552 and at Dave Fanning Show.
Garth, first of all, welcome to Ireland. And it's been a long time. People have been waiting to see you for a good deal of time. Had you heard about Ireland in a big way in terms of this is a great place for country music?
Well, I'd seen the charts and I'd seen, you know, what we'd done, and then we'd been working with the Dream Chaser guys for like 2 months before, you know, the last part of the American part of the tour, and they'd been telling us, you know, what to expect because they're from over here. But gotta be honest, man, they told us to expect a lot, but I was shocked the first night in the Point there. That was a big night for me.
Right. There are people who'd put you into this new country category, this supposed sort of all these new stars bringing country music to millions of new people. But there is one thing about your music that's different than all of theirs, and I think that you go back a little bit further. You're a bit more traditional than a lot of these supposed new ones. Would you accept that?
Well, yeah, I mean, some of my stuff is, and some of my stuff isn't. So, you know, a lot of it's due to the influences like Jones and straight out of the country feel, but a lot of influences too, like the James Taylors, you know, the Billy Joels, Elton John. I mean, even our live show is more influenced by the rock bands, like Queen, you know, Kansas, you know, Kiss, those people like that, the big theater bands.
Well, do you think with that live show that you saw a niche in the market, you saw there was a hole there in the market, that people wanted country music, didn't necessarily like the way it was presented, and you saw a new way, a new exciting way for the 90s to present it to people?
Well, I just saw that the crowd was having a lot of fun and it didn't seem like the band got to have as much fun. So I think a lot of that was because they were tied down, you know, to the hardwire mics, the hardwire guitars.
Yeah.
And the wireless systems and the headset mics have just totally freed us up to be part of the crowd. So actually, instead of a crowd coming to see a band, it's just a bunch of people and a bunch of people getting together and just partying for, you know, 2 hours. And it's much more that atmosphere than one performing for the other.
Do you think in some ways that your advertising degree has been a good help in terms of putting you across to people?
That's a good question. I told my dad, you know, I said, man, I've never used my degree. I've never made a dime off my degree. And my dad said, I'm sure you use your degree every day and just, you know, don't realize it. And I'm sure he's probably right. But as far as ever working, you know, as one, I never thought of it. My idea of marketing is simply treat people the way I want to be treated. Good quality product for a low price, and hopefully their money's worth on everything from concessions to shows to CDs.
Mm. But your dad also once said to you that things that come quick can go quick.
Sure.
Now, one of the quickest things that came in the 90s is Garth Brooks.
Right.
So do you still think of that little phrase? Do you have it written over your bed
sure.
at night or anything?
Sure. Yet? And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, at the end of the 90s, we look back and it says, you know, one of the quickest things that came, one of the quickest things that went. You know, because I can't complain if it does happen that way, because I sure as hell wasn't complaining when it was coming. So I'm enjoying the front half of it, and we'll see what the back half has to offer.
About sort of 8 or 9 years ago, just let's say around 86 direction, you were probably at your lowest in terms of what you wanted to do with your life. Things mm-hmm. weren't going too well. Now, one of the things that anybody has to do with country music, no matter where they come from, you're Oklahoma, you go to Nashville. Were you disappointed with Nashville? Did you see Nashville not as a music town you had been told it was, but more as a business town?
Sure. And that's exactly what it is. I believe it was August or September of 1985, I made my first trip to Nashville, thinking that, you know, record contracts grew on trees and thinking it was some kind of like, you know, the Emerald City and the Wizard of Oz. And it's not that way. It's a very business-oriented town, very serious town. And all my time, I've only used, you know, music up to that point. I'd only used music, one, for fun, and two, also for, you know, dating girls and stuff. I mean, it was never used as a business. And when you get into Nashville, man, it's just numbers and buildings. Mm. And what I found out, though, is that if you apply somebody that you trust and love with the business end of it, there is a heart and soul end of it that you dream of, and that's what you get. So that's what I'm in right now and have been in since probably, you know, the first 5 or 6 months there in Nashville on the second trip. So it's there, but you just got to wade through the, you know, through what musicians and artists call crap. It's just you got to wade through the real world to get to this fantasy life that you lead.
Looking back
Well, when you were growing up listening to music and when you loved music, I mean, obviously there'd be plenty of country stars that you could name from George Strait to whoever.
Right.
But there's also, as you mentioned just earlier, Foreigner or whatever, there's like there was the rock bands, the big pyrotechnic rock bands.
Foreigner was a great band.
Okay, so what was it about that? I mean, like, could you have easily become, if you like, a rock artist?
No, didn't have a strong enough voice, for one. Didn't have the rock genetics, you know. Mm. The 6'3", 6'4", slender, long hair, you know, hair still left on your head kind of thing. And it just didn't fit me. I mean, it didn't fit my, you know, my way of thinking. Also, the whole rock and roll image and lifestyle didn't fit my way of thinking. So knowing that I loved music, knowing that I loved listening to it and stuff, it was when I heard Strait in 80 and heard what he was doing. It's like, yeah. Wow, I would love to do that. And ever since that day, I've been trying to be a Strait wannabe. You know, it's still up to this day now.
But by the same token, the lifestyle that was thrust upon you, whether you liked it or not, after the success of the first few, like, say, just say the Garth Brooks album, the first one, I mean, it was a lifestyle that came so fast and was so huge that you took a back seat from that. Now, at one stage, that back seat could have, or could it have, lasted for the rest of your life. Could you have literally given up?
Well, you're talking about it just like the first year of just...
No, I mean, you took time off at one stage. You said, I've had enough of this, after about the second or third album.
That's
much more recent.
It's the last 6 months of 92, sure. Yeah. The Chase had just come out, and my little girl, my first child, was coming. And that was the big thing. That was the big reason. Never thinking that I could do anything. I mean, I'm 110% if I'm going this way, or 110% going that way. But I can't do 50-50.
Mm.
So, you know, if you don't love music all heart and soul and everything else is forsaken, then I don't think you can do music justice. So it's like, well, I can't not be 100% father to a child. My parents were never less than that to me. But how can you do them both? So thinking, yeah, I'm going to have to be honest and say, I'm out of here. And I don't know, man, when they handed me Taylor, it came from all over my body, all around me, this new love, this new feeling. And I didn't feel 1% drain away from the music. So what I took that was, and I hope that I was right, was a sign that God's saying that, man, you can do them both. So hopefully I'm still after, you know, the right avenue. I hope that I am on it. And I'm sure if I'm not right, God's going to tell me here pretty soon, if he hadn't been trying to tell me for the last 2 years.
Well, do you think it was a new love also that you found for your wife? I mean, so much of music at the moment in terms of country music is not like it was years ago in terms of the lyrics. It's much more marriages breaking up and things going wrong and unfaithful and etc. Now, you have been that. Do you think that when you came back the second time or something, that it was a better love? That second one was more real than the first one?
Back the second time.
Back to your wife.
We never separated.
No, I don't mean separated, but you had said in one interview that you were unfaithful and you realized it was a bad thing to do.
Right.
So, in other words, when you came back to your wife, or when you told your wife or said, let's have a proper life here together, was it better from there on?
Yeah, I'm afraid this is going to be misunderstood simply because the picture I see and the picture you see, I don't think are the same. The lifestyle that I led in the first year of my career after Garth Brooks' album hit, was not that lifestyle that any wife would probably want her husband to lead. Still with no love lost whatsoever for my wife. It's just, I got caught up in the left side of things. So when it got to the point to where my wife said, look, I'm not asking you to choose, but I'm asking you to be, you're gonna have to be better at being a husband, or I'm gonna find someone that is.
Nice.
That hit me really hard because my wife has been nothing but good to me. And to think that I wasn't holding up my end, I guess knowing the whole time I wasn't holding up my end but not wanting to admit it, finally it was there staring me in the face. And I was granted a second chance, and I'm making the most of that second chance. And you know, it's been 5 years now, and things are going well, and I'm still not the husband I would like to be, but I'm working on it.
Okay, well then, if the money and the success could have brought you somewhere and you held back for a little bit, do you think that the money and success was going up there and it was Taylor that probably brought you back down to earth and made you realize there's a reality here that's different?
Me and my wife agreed a long time ago that we would put ourselves and our music second to the career, because that was the dream. That was how we were going to support each other. That's how we were going to support our children through college and stuff. So we did that. And then when Taylor came, no child can be second to anything. So when she went in to number one position, It can't be child, business, wife. It has to be family, business. So family went there, and my wife and I have a much more time, we're making much more time for each other to communicate, to fight, to love, to laugh, and to plan, to look back and learn together. So yeah, I mean, Taylor has been a big inspiration. That the same way August, the new baby, will come and hopefully double it as far as the intensity of how much time you spend with your family.
A lot of the people, just to get back to music then, who don't like country music or who say they don't like country music, might very easily like country music if they gave it a chance and weren't, to be blunt, so racist, because they don't like the kind of people that country music supposedly plays to.
Well, I mean, there's two factors. One, they hear it, they don't like it, that's cool. Two, they haven't heard it in a while, and they just got this stereotype, which, no offense whatsoever to you guys or the printed press, but that's why they do have that stereotype. Sure. It's stereotyped as a redneck music, a very close-minded music. And simply, to those people, all I can say is if you think country music is that, then you don't know country music. It can be standing right beside you and they wouldn't know it. Country music addresses social issues of today. Very aware issues. We address issues just ourselves, like date rape, domestic violence, freedom to love anyone you choose, racial interaction. Mary Chapin Carpenter covers things like women's rights. Extremely, very urgent issues. They address the ecology. They address the AIDS fight. So people that think country music is not socially aware and stuff just simply don't know what it is. And I can't blame them for that, but that's what part of this tour is to educate. Right now, we're not educating anybody because they're educating us. I mean, we came here, these people know 10 times more about country music than I know.
Well, what is it then, do you think, that people want in country music in the 90s? I mean, is it the fact that you get a good song? Is it that there are lyrics that directly relate to people's lives? And is it that maybe other musics, like, for instance, rock music, is turning into so much just let's dance and have a good time, and let's not sort of, if you like, have issues, and let's not talk to people in a real way?
Sure, man, I think it's all three. I think you hit it all. It's the good songs, it's the lyrics that people can sit there and not throw their 3 minutes away, but actually learn something from it or relate to it. And the fact that rock and roll is not what rock and roll used to be. We'll all agree with that. And I don't mean to offend anybody. Now, the things that I don't want to see in country music, I for sure don't want to see country music think that it has to become rock and roll to be cool. Country music is cool if they'll just keep the honesty and the sincerity in it. If they'll keep it in there real tight and they'll compete with each other to get the best stuff. But what I'm afraid is going to happen, which is already starting, is they're just going to flood the market. With thousands of acts, the markets will then break down like rock and roll did into young country, old country, new country like rock did in the middle of the road, CHR, all this stuff, and thus beginning the crumbling of the empire. So right now the format's rocking, everything is great, and if we can keep the honesty and the sincerity in it and keep the gold diggers out of it, I think we'll be all right.
How good are the songs that are out there at the moment? I mean, I've heard that for the last couple of albums that you've sifted through anything from 2,000 to 10,000 songs to put them on the albums. Does that mean that you're a perfectionist, or does that mean there's not very good songs out there?
Well, it means there's a lot of songs out there, a lot of songs you hear for one album, you'll hear again for the next album. But it also just increases my odds. I mean, if I've got 10 cuts, I listen to 100 songs. I've got a better chance if I listen to 1,000 to find 10 better songs than 100. So the more you multiply that 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 songs, the better odds you got of making the best album you can. The problem that's coming, of course, is there's more artists than there are writers now, which means the writers aren't letting the song set and letting the song perfect itself. As soon as the thing is finished, which it ain't finished yet, it's being out and being cut. Another thing is so many writer artists. So many writers feel they have to write so much stuff of their own, be it 10 cuts, half cuts, whatever, and that's hard to do. And then probably the worst thing that can happen in the business right now that's going on in the States is the UCD thing, where the independent writer will then soon be shut out because he can't make a living writing things. So I can tell you this, if it's not in the song, it ain't going to happen. I don't care if Elvis comes back and sings it. Ain't gonna happen. So we gotta take care of those songwriters, and if we do that, we'll be okay. But right now, it's looking like we're not doing it too good.
In terms of the song, and disregarding the live show for a second, what's so different now about, say, what you're doing than the Grand Ole Opry people, which was my idea of what a lot of country music was, say, some years back? Just the kind of songs that were around then.
Well, I mean, you got to remember the Grand Ole Opry people, and we're talking about the upper echelon class of country music. You're talking the 40s, the 50s, and the 60s. Those things related to those people then. I mean, there was a lot of tunes about blue-collar people. Prison tunes went over sure. real well. And a lot of these things were about people that just, you know, got caught, had a hard time, came back out, and tried to do life again. That fit at that time. Right now, you know, no country artist that I know that's, you know, 35 or younger has spent any time in prison. So they just all of a sudden now it changes. And what it's changing to is the social aware issues that we talked about earlier. So that's what's the difference between this and the Grand Ole Opry thing is. Also, the music itself is very different. We have a song called Standing Outside the Fire that's got this big percussion breakdown in it. That is in no other country music song. And there's probably a reason for it because it isn't country. So, I mean, there's things that we have to look out for. I have to look out without stretching myself too far and expecting country music radio to play something that isn't country. Yeah. They've been awful good to me for doing that, but I've got to make sure I don't take it too far.
What about Thunder Roll, speaking of sound? I mean, like, that was a video that you made, and you mm-hmm. could have pulled back on that, but you didn't. Do you find it ironic that a video that was banned, or a video that they wouldn't play, the same people who wouldn't play it, subsequently gave you awards for the video?
Yeah, that was a difficult one. The only thing I can think of is the ones that wouldn't play it were the TNN networks. The ones that voted on the CMA was the industry, and I think the industry just wanted to see it happen just to show TNN won. They shouldn't, you know, be the ones who decide what people see. The people should decide on it, and then if they say get it off, it goes off. I think that was the message that went out. I still respect TNN for still not playing the video. They're sticking by their guns, and but it's not going to stop. We Shall Be Free, I had a hard time with. Standing Outside the Fire, as a company in a country which I will remain nameless, just last week asked us that they would air it if they could edit it, and what they wanted to edit out was the face through the flames because they thought of it as the devil. And it's like, look, here's the piece. If you don't want to air it, just don't air it. So I'm still hoping and praying someday a video is going to come out for me that'll fit all formats and won't cause any crap.
Well, that time that you took off, say the 8 months or whatever, looking back, it was obviously really good, if only for bringing you back down to earth, changing nappies, whatever, making you a human being again. Now, if there's been two sides to the success of Garth Brooks, in other words, before the break and after the break, if I asked you, is success addictive? How would you answer it now compared to, say, what you might have answered it the last time?
Yeah, I mean, success is very addictive. I don't think you're going to get any argument out of me. You're not going to get any argument out of anybody in the industry or the people that Garth Brooks is not as aggressive, Garth Brooks is not as intense as he was before the child came. I mean, I'm not going to deny that. The fact that, is it coincidence or is it that because the success hasn't been what it was then? Now, over here, it didn't seem to make a difference. But in the States so far, you know, we have seen the decline in album sales. The concert tour this year was the biggest one we've ever had. We started the year out with two award shows so far. So, I mean, I don't know. It's a hard call to make. Success is very addictive, but not as addictive as holding that little girl.
Okay, well then, finally, Garth, the whole idea of
thank you
mainstream
very much.
Or the whole idea of new country or whatever. I mean, if you're going to be categorized by American radio, that's one thing, because American radio categorizes everybody in their own little sort of small thingamabob. Could I put you under mainstream? And if so, is that putting you down a bit?
It's not putting me down, and it's a compliment if you like mainstream. It's a compliment to me. If you hate mainstream, then yeah, you're putting me down. If I am standing here and there is a flag above my head, I want that flag to read country. That's where my home has been, and as long as they'll have me, that's where I'll stay.
Right. And are you in control?
No. I haven't been since the first day. If anybody's driving this bus, man, it's God himself, because, you know, I've been trying to catch up since day one. So, I mean, I'll take credit for when things go wrong, because that's usually when I'm trying to push my way through. But all the things that's went right, this is divine intervention happening here.
Okay, Garth, thank you very much for talking
to us. Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Thank you very much.